everyone. I'm Henrik, and this is Red Ice Radio, based out of Sweden. If you are new to the program, we cover a lot of different subjects that we find both interesting and important, from fringe to more down to earth. And many of our programs are designed to make you question and reevaluate what you think you know. In the past, we've covered a lot on the shadow side of the Scandinavian countries, specifically Sweden, that you, I, and others are told to admire for their egalitarian values, good economics, and corrupt free politics. Well, it's all lies, and it's only a few of many very well-kept secrets of the big government tyrannies up in the north. These kinds of stories you'll never hear about in the state-subsidized media, and therefore many people do not believe it is happening. Well, none are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they are free. One of many cases we've covered on this was the abduction of Dominic Johansson by Swedish childcare services, an example of how an all-powerful bureaucracy with no oversight have managed to destroy an entire family. Today we're going to talk about a related story that has been going on in Finland. We have Warren McLaughlin with us from Australia to discuss the tragic story of how a failed marriage with a Finnish woman who consequently placed their children in the care of the Finnish government and their pill-pushing psychiatrists developed into a one-man battle against the state to take his children back to live with their father, the parent who cares about the children in Australia. Welcome, Warren. Thank you so much for coming on Red Ice Radio here with us today. It's great to have you here. This is going to be an interesting story. So first of all, thank you for coming on then, Warren.
Well, yeah, no worries. I appreciate it very much. Thank you, Henry.
You bet. So let's just kind of introduce your story here to our audience a little bit, and how you what has happened to you, and obviously your situation overall when you came up to Scandinavia and everything else, how you met your wife, whatever you're comfortable with kind of laying the ground, if you will, here for us, Warren. Please go ahead and do so.
Okay. Well, in 1998, at the beginning of 1998, I decided to take a holiday to Europe. And I went to Finland, and I met a woman named Kaisu, and I found her very attractive, and I fell in love with her, and we got married, and I took her back to Australia, and it was like a fairy tale, really. It was the happiest time of my life, apart from my children. But anyway. So we got back to Australia, and our first son, William, was born in November 1998, and he was an intelligent, handsome, healthy child. And then in the beginning of 1999, I noticed that Kaisu was homesick, so I sent her and baby William back to Finland to visit her family. And they came back about a month later, and life went back to normal. And I noticed that Kaisu was found William to be a burden. And he was up to all sorts of, before he could walk, before he could, less than 6 months old, he was crawling all around the apartment. And he would crawl into the kitchen cupboards and throw everything on the floor, and then Kaisu would put it all back in. He'd crawl back in and throw it all on the floor again. Kaisu would start the vacuum up, and he would pounce on the vacuum cleaner, and he managed to break it. I don't know how, because there was no visible signs of damage, but after that it would only work on one speed, and it would let out an ugly howl. And I didn't worry, but eventually, years later, it burnt out, and it was a horrible stink, and it set off the fire alarm. One day I was sitting at the kitchen table, and William crawled over, and he was about 8 months old, and he grabbed the hairs on my legs and he stood himself up. I was impressed with that. But, he was a wonderful child. And anyway, Kaisu simply wanted him to sit still and shut up. And so she began pinching him and slapping him and pulling his hair and biting him. And I tried many times to correct her behavior, but it only provoked her, and I really didn't know what to do about it, because I did love Kaisu, and I loved William, and life went on, and so year 2000 we bought a house, and And then 2001, at November, Kaisu took baby William to Finland again. And this time she phoned me from Finland in December 2001, and she said, I'm pregnant. And I said, well, that's great. And so then in January 2002, she said she was too sick to fly home. And then she was too pregnant to fly home. And then she said she'd be home. Then baby Mikhail was born in July, and he was intelligent and healthy and handsome. And, you know, so I was very happy. Two beautiful, wonderful baby boys. And
right.
Anyway, yeah. And so, but then she said she'd be home after the christening. And then she said she applied for a divorce. And then she said that there was a chance to save our marriage if I came to Finland. So I worked very hard for the rest of the year, and I saved my money, and I landed in Finland in January 2003. And she told me that she only promised me the chance to save our marriage to delay a Hague application for international child abduction. And anyway, so I asked for Mikhail's birth certificate, and she said no. So I went to the hospital, I think it was Porvoo Hospital, and they said no. And I don't understand, I'm the father, we're married, I've got a passport, all these things, but no. And so I eventually tracked down some other government department, and they gave it to me, and I wasn't keeping records at that stage, but the man told me that some other person in the legal section of the Finnish government was giving Kaisu advice on how to stall me on this, to make it harder for me to make a successful Hague application. So that's what all this stalling was about. But unfortunately, I didn't get his name. But anyway, so that was 2002. And so I asked Kaisu to come home. Obviously, she said no. I asked her to let me take William home. She said no. So I went back to Australia after about 3 weeks, I think. And then
Did you see your wife and your children when you were there at that time?
I did. Yeah. I did, yeah.
Did you stay with them?
No. I rented some student accommodation. But once I asked Kaisu for the birth certificate, once I obtained the birth certificate, and I went to see the Australian embassy, and they told me that I should register Mikhail as an Australian citizen. So I did.
Because William was, right? Because he was born in Australia, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Australian passport. Yeah. And anyway, so once Kaisu became aware that I had this this birth certificate and I'd registered Mikhail as an Australian citizen, that was whatever was left there of our relationship, that killed it, and I wasn't allowed to visit her home anymore. And so I was only allowed to meet with the children in government buildings from that point on. And then, in August 2003, she divorced me in a Finnish court, and the divorce court order said that I was allowed to have custody of my children 1 month per year, but only in Finland, and only if I surrendered my passport to my ex-wife. And so, and they also said I was allowed to have unlimited information from all Finnish government people concerning my children. And anyway, so I worked hard, and I saved my money, and I arrived in Finland in the sort of Finnish summer of 2004, and I said, well, here I am. Can I have my 1 month's custody? And by this stage, Kaisu had begun dumping responsibility for the care of our children onto psychiatrists. And I was very alarmed with this because I was familiar with the history of psychiatry, and I was not impressed. So I arrived in Finland, and I said, well, can I have my 1 month's custody? And Kaisu and the psychiatrist said, well, we don't actually care about the court order. And no, you can't. And so I went to see a lawyer, and we began a court case to improve, to you know, get my children back to Australia, and failing that, to place my children in the care of the closest possible of their many Finnish family members. And we had 50 of them at our wedding in Helsinki. So, you know, but also I was seeking improved parental rights if I couldn't get my children back. And Kaisu and the psychiatrists, they counterattacked with demands to deny me all further communication with my children and take away their last names.
Jeez.
Mm.
Wow. So let me ask you this, if you don't mind, then, because it sounds like something changed with Kais as well. Do you know if she had a history of being, you know, mentally ill or any problems in that way since before?
Well, I was not aware of such a thing, but I did notice that she was easily angered. She had a bad temper, but I also liked her sense of humor, and you know, I genuinely did love her. But yeah, she just seemed to find William to be a burden, and she was very easily annoyed by anything that he did. Basically, any sound or movement pretty much was a reason to you know, punish him.
Yeah.
And yeah, so anyway, so in 2004, in the summer of 2004, my lawyer advised me to drop the case because we could only expect a worse result. And so anyway,
what would be worse in this case?
Well, for example, the children would lose their last names. Yeah, that's probably about the only thing they could have done to me, I think, because they could have totally denied me all contact with the children. I had very little contact, but they could have totally denied the contact.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and so anyway, I began writing letters to making criminal complaints against these psychiatrists to the Finnish Justice Department. And I have some very interesting statements, which perhaps later at the end of the interview, I would like to read just pieces of them from these psychiatrists.
Sure. Yeah.
They say the most amazing things, you know. But anyway, so I was complaining to the Finnish Justice Department that my children were being kidnapped and that they intended to drug my children. Because, you know, I know the pattern of psychiatry, and so I was hoping that by forewarning the Finnish Justice Department that would scare the psychiatrists off, at least to some degree, and hopefully they wouldn't drug my children, and then maybe one day I could get them back in one piece, you know.
Yeah.
But the Finnish Justice Department simply didn't care. And so, you know, even though I've accurately predicted everything since the beginning and right up to the present day, over and over and over again, to every Finnish government department, thousands of times, literally, they just don't care. And what it comes down to is that the Finnish Justice Department tells me, most of them simply tell me I need to talk to somebody else. But if they can't ignore me, what they say to me is that, basically, the Finnish Justice Department will not make a criminal charge against a Finnish psychiatrist when they're acting as a psychiatrist unless they get a complaint from Valvira. Now, Valvira is the Medical Investigation Board, and I've been to that office twice, and I've met one of their senior investigators twice. Now, this man, this Marcus Henriksen, He was one of their senior investigators, and guess what? He's a psychiatrist. Yeah, so you have to complain to a psychiatrist about a psychiatrist, and if that psychiatrist thinks there's criminal activity on the part of the other psychiatrist in the way he treats his patient, then he will make a complaint to the police, and only then will the police make a criminal charge against that psychiatrist.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to let you continue your story here and what happened, and I'll kind of interject with questions about that later. So just go ahead, Warren.
Okay. So anyway, he also told me another very interesting point. He said, we don't normally investigate unless there's a death. So, in other words, a psychiatrist can literally do anything to his patient, excluding death, and only then will Valvira investigate, and then it's a psychiatrist investigating a psychiatrist. Anyway, so I also began writing letters to, you know, phone calls and letters, and I've door-knocked countless government people in Finland, like, you know, the Justice Department and the psychiatrists and the social workers, and, you know, also I've contacted media and human rights groups and lawyers, and I wasn't able to find a human rights group anywhere in the world that could do anything effective about these Finnish psychiatrists. And so, anyway, lawyers, there's some hope there, but unfortunately, I don't have a lot of money, and these trips to Finland have been very expensive, and they've consumed most of my spare money. But I did find a lawyer in Finland, and his name is Tero, and he's a kind-hearted soul, and we've become friends, and he's not a specialist in human rights, but he does deliver my mail to my children, and he does collect communication from the psychiatrist for me. And these psychiatrists, by the way, and these social workers, even though I have this court order that says I have unlimited information about from the Finnish government about my children, they almost never answer my questions. Sometimes I get letters in the mail years later that tell me bits and pieces. And, for example, I've been asking these social workers and psychiatrists since the year 2003 to place my children in the care of the closest possible of their many Finnish family members. And also I've been asking them, have you ever made any attempt to do this? And they simply refuse to answer the question. So it's reasonable to assume they have not. My lawyer also, he delivers, I send mail packages to my children, like, you know, with food and organic food and toys and clothes and things. And he delivers the packages to them. And recently they've told me that I'm not allowed to have any more photos of my children because they know I'm writing a book. And they've been drugging William since 2006.
Why have they been doing this? What is their reasoning here?
Well, they claim he's restless and aggressive. Now, I don't know about you, but if my mother took me to the other side of the world and then dumped me, I might be restless and aggressive too.
Well, exactly. And this is one of my questions here. I mean, where are they today? Where's William and Mikael today?
Okay, well, William is perhaps I could just think very shortly answer your question. Okay, I sort of got a timeline summary in my head.
Definitely, sorry about that, go ahead.
No, that's cool. So 2005, 2006, I simply continued seeking to contact people to help my children. And 2006, I became aware of the drugging of William on the basis that he's restless and aggressive. And then 2007, I visited Finland again. By this time, William was put in a place called Tamarini Reception Home, and the manager, Marjana Tillman, she wrote me a letter and said that I'm not allowed to send a doc, because I made a request, and she said, you're not allowed to send a doctor of your choice, a human rights activist of your choice, a lawyer of your choice, or a religious person of your choice to visit your own children. So if the police will not investigate these people and I'm not allowed to send, people of my, respectable people to inquire about their well-being, then these people can literally do anything short of murder my children if they want to. And I couldn't possibly imagine a better place in the entirety of Finland for a sadist or a pedophile to hide, because they are literally above the law, like nowhere else.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, beginning in 2000, and when Mikhail was 2 years old, Kaisu tried to put him in speech therapy, which I thought was rather bizarre. I've never been able to get a document on that. I keep trying. But anyway, so that tracking forward again to 2007, Williams in his children's home. My children had been in and out of government homes and foster homes beginning in 2002, actually, to varying degrees. But in Williams' case, it became permanent in 2007. And I think Kaisu basically, she wants to have a little bit of contact with the children, but she thinks of them as a burden. She's more content to spend, she needs to have a job. She likes to work. She likes to do that, and she likes to have a social life, and she likes to see the children occasionally. But she doesn't, one of the reasons she dumped the children on the state was to make it harder for me to communicate to them, because she simply wants to forget me, and she doesn't want to communicate to me at all. She hasn't communicated to me for years.
Do you know why this is the case? Why did this happen all of a sudden? Because it seemed to come kind of out of the blue, as you explained it anyway.
Well, you know, Kaisu was very homesick.
Yeah.
You know, and so, basically she just, I don't know, I guess, she just decided that she was bored with me or didn't love me as much or didn't love me anymore or whatever. But anyway, so
you felt, Warren, that you have not gotten an answer to why this happened, correct? That's how you feel at this stage.
Well, I think that basically she fell out of love with me, but I think the main driver was the fact that she wanted to live in Finland.
Okay.
And I offered to move to Finland when I was there in 2003, but she said no. Hmm. And see, basically, our arguments stemmed from the fact that I was trying to stop Kaisu from harming William, you know, mm-hmm. which began in 1999, you know, slapping and screaming and pinching and
yeah.
pulling his hair and she could scream like a banshee. He would shake with fear when she screamed at him.
Jeez.
And she was a big woman, you know, that was a source of argument. My attempts to, you know, to make her, not hurt William. I would stop her whenever I was close enough to do so.
Yeah.
But, you know, anyway, so 2007, William's in this children's home, and I don't know, I think Kaisu was mainly caring for Mikhail at that stage, but 2008, just more of this, when, you know, obviously I stayed in Finland for like 2 months in 2007. 2008, I'm, you know, contacting people, you know, will you help my children, please? And, you know, by this stage, I begin to discover computers and, you know, a book was starting to form, because these letters to these government people in Finland, they just kept getting longer and they had to get sections and headings and whatever. And one day I finally realized, well, this is a book. And, you know, so 2009, I was in Finland for the summer, and both of my children by this stage were put in a children's home called Turlaton in the suburb of Kauniainen. And it's a beautiful place. It's close to Helsinki, and there's million-dollar homes on the lake there. And the home was on a quarter of an acre, and it was two stories with a basement and seven bedrooms. And it was very nice, you know, but the social veneer was very nice, you know. But one of the staff members, Jukka Mertainen, he told me that four out of seven of the children were being drugged.
Did he say with what?
Oh, well, there's a long list. No, but I've got references to at least 10 different drugs. And
Is it mostly like SSRIs and things like that, or what is it?
Yeah,
like?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you've got Levazin, Seroquel, Zyprexa, Atarax, I can't, Risperdal, about 4 or 5, but I think they've given William at least 10 different types of drugs, and the last I heard, they were actually giving him 5 at the same time.
So your main, well, beyond the fact that you're not allowed to see, I mean, there are layers here of things that you don't agree with, of course, but one of the main issues right now currently is that the form of psychiatry, as you're talking about, that they're being subjected to with the medication and everything, that's what you're initially now are objecting to and trying to just get them off that stage one, correct? That's like the first thing that has to be done, correct?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I was, like I said, I tried to prevent it before it be 4 years before it even happened.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. And because, I like I said, if I could just keep them away from drugs, maybe one day I could get them back in one piece.
Yeah.
You know, and so 2009, there I am in this nice children's home. Both my children are there, and I really don't see the justification for putting Mikhail there. They claimed both of my children have Asperger's syndrome, and I've done a bit of research on this, and trust me, If you was to be put into a room with a psychiatrist and he was to get the list of symptoms of Asperger's syndrome and he was to stare at you for a day, you would have at least one of those symptoms.
Well, you know, this is the case with all these diseases that they're inventing now psychologically and whatnot as excuses to get you on the pills, of course, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So basically this place, Plastikar Lapset, it's interesting too because it's Finnish for Save the Children. Mm. And I consider that a form of gallows humor, rather similar to the Arbeit macht frei above the gates of Auschwitz. You know, work makes free. And I think it may have started out with good intentions, this organization, but I think literally today it would be an in-joke, you know, Save the Children, ha, ha, ha. You know, so they, you know, gallows humor. So basically what you've got is you've got the drug industry and the medical industry and at least some children's charities, and they're basically kidnapping children and drugging them, and they're basically billing the taxpayer for it. And so, you know, I would be very interested, to know, like, if you added up the, like, for example, one day in this place, Turleton, William received a mail package from my friend Ule. I have a friend called Ule, and he's been delivering mail to my children too.
Mm.
And it was the saddest thing, like, because in the package there was a packet of organic raisins, which we call them sultanas. But anyway, William liked them very much, and these social workers decided he couldn't have them. And so William snatched them and fled to the rooftop. And, he's a very smart boy. And he said he was issuing his list of demands. You know, if you don't let me keep my sultanas, I'll jump off the roof. And if you don't let me do this and this and if you don't stop doing that, I'll jump off the roof, etc. And anyway, they sent the fire brigade and the ambulance there. And, the result was that he ended up in hospital, and I have statements from these psychiatrists where they admit to pinning him to the ground for 2.5 hours at a time, and you know, because he's restless and aggressive, and I said to them, look, this is complete insanity. I said, look, you know, if I was caring for William, because I've got longer legs, and you know, I could simply, if he was restless and aggressive, I could simply set him free. And chase after him and make sure he didn't hurt himself or break anything. And I'm sure that in 5 or 10 minutes he'd calm down. And then I would say, William, my son, you know, what would you like to do? Let's have some fun. What would you like to do? You know, and I'm sure everything would be just fine. And you know, these psychiatrists accuse my children, particularly William. Fortunately, Mikhail has escaped drugging, and it looks like he's going to be safe, which is excellent. But that, I'll get into that in a moment. Mm. But so they accuse William of having extreme behavior problems, And during my 2003, 2004, 2007, 2009, 2011 visits to Finland, I did not witness William or Mikhail having any behavior problems at all.
So you haven't been shown the proof for this, if you will?
No. That reminds me, back to 2004, I was, and I will get back to Mikhail, but, so 2004, the main thing is William, of course, he's in such danger, but
yeah.
I was in this, place called Simpukka Päiväkoti in 2004, and I was only allowed to see my children for 2 hours at a time, twice a week, if I surrendered my passport to the manager of the children's home, Outi Ojala.
For the time that you were there, or what?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
That's right. And so it must have been on my fifth visit, I think. I was preparing to leave, and I heard my son William's voice, and I stuck my head around the corner, and there he was on a kindergarten teacher's lap, and her name was Marit Hervinen. And William was struggling to get away, and he headbutted her, and she punched him in the face, right? And I saw all this in a half a second flat. Yeah. And anyway, I went and complained to the manager, Outi Ojala, and I said, that woman just punched my son William in the face. And this Marit Hervinen, she said, yes, but he was biting, scratching, things like this. And I said in a loud, angry voice, I said, I do not care. You do not punch a five-year-old boy in the face.
Yeah.
Ah, excuse
me. It's okay. It's all right. Take your time, Warren. It's okay.
Anyway, so Outi Ojala, she kicked me out of the kindergarten.
Yeah.
And so I went to the police station, the Vantaa police station, and I made a criminal complaint with the senior criminal investigator, Jay Juranen. And after I made my complaint, the Outi Ojala, she made a complaint against me with Jay Juranen, and she accused me of picking up a leather medicine ball. And it was 1 meter tall, and it weighed about 50 kilos. It's amazing what they've got in Finland. I mean, you know, the children's homes and the kindergartens, whatever, they got everything, you know. I mean, it's not that we're poor in Australia, but we don't spend as much on that sort of stuff as they do. And
well, that's because it's government running the whole show up there in all of Scandinavia and Finland, including. So they have all the expenses paid for, you know.
Yeah. This 1 meter tall leather medicine ball, it would have been a great thing to have when I was a kid, but it must have weighed about 50 kilos. Anyway, this Outi Ojala accused me of picking this thing up and throwing it as hard as I could at both of my children, both of my infant children.
While you were there? Is that what you...
Yeah, while I was there.
Okay.
And at the kindergarten. And this was after I made my complaint. And I said to Jay Juranen, look, she's only trying to discredit me as a witch.
Sure, yeah.
And I said, look, you know, for one thing, if Ojala was to back me up on Hervinen's admission, she would be criminally charged. And then if the media got involved, Ojala might lose her job as the manager of the kindergarten.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So obviously there's a vested interest there.
Yeah.
And I said, look, how about we go to the kindergarten and let's see if I'm physically capable of picking up this ball. Although I could pick up 50 kilos, I don't know. It was such an awkward shape, and I don't know if I actually could pick it up and throw it. And
yeah.
I said, well, let's go there and see if I can, because I don't think I can, and that will establish the fact that she's lying.
Yeah.
And he said no. And so he decided that... Ojala was telling the truth and that I was lying. And I believe this was the easiest way out, the least politically damaging, certainly for the kindergarten, but perhaps for him as well. I mean, I don't know, could this have repercussions on his career if he, you know, but anyway, that's another subject. But.
Yeah.
So
no, but it's a good point. They're all connected together,
yeah.
And if they're all, in for whatever reason, is trying to keep your children there or other children there for the sake of, you know, who knows what, or experimentation. Or as I said, this is, you know, they're protecting each other. That's just the way it goes, you know, and specifically when you have government agencies like this and you do not have independent people that have the, you know, right to kind of audit them, if you will, and their behavior and everything else. You have, this is the danger with the situation. When the state becomes all powerful as it is in Scandinavia and Finland, this is one of the main problems, that you have a group of people involved in something which, you know, they might want to be there, and they're there to protect each other. It's very dangerous, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, I had an idea that, you know, if you add it up, if the Finnish government would help me to, you know, determine, you know, with an accurate study, exactly how much it has cost the Finnish taxpayer for the special care of my, the special care of my children over these last 10 plus years.
Yeah.
Now, not the normal care, not like, you know, when you, the normal schools or, you know, normal government expenditure for the average child, but the special treatment that my children have received.
Right.
If, like for example, the children's homes, the drugs, the police, the ambulance, the fire brigade, the social workers, the cooks, the cleaners, the interpreters, the, you know, and on and on.
Yeah.
And if they could do an accurate study of the total cost, my guess is it would be 10 times more, 10 times more than it would cost me to maintain an average home in Finland for my children and I. And I believe, if I don't believe they ever will do such a study or help me, you know, getting information out of these Finnish government people is like pulling teeth. But, you know, but if I could get that information, I think it would be, and particularly if it was a government report, I think it would really knock the Finnish government for a six. You know, particularly if they could, if I could get that on the national media, I think it would be a national outrage.
Yeah. Well, you know, you'd hope so. I'd hope so as well.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's the same situation in Sweden, Warren. It's the same there. And well, you heard. We sent you that program as well with Kristi Johansson and his child Dominic. They're trying to get out from Sweden. And to this day, as we're doing this recording, they have yet to resolve the situation and get you know, their child back, basically. And it's the same type of bureaucracy and governmental, you know, they're being gated out, basically. They receive no answers, no anything. It's unbelievable. It's the same situation here.
Yeah. So I had no trouble believing that story at all, of course, but that just reminded me, in 2004, I was in, had a meeting with these social workers and psychiatrists, and my ex-wife was there, and they had a lawyer there with them as well, and they had, I don't know who else was there. Maybe they even had a member of the secret police. I mean, I don't think I was that important at that stage. I don't think I'm still that important. But anyway, because, you know, I haven't had been able to get much attention, and this is what's fantastic about this Red Ice Radio interview. But so anyway, I had this meeting. There was at least 10 of them. And my lawyer, Tero, was there with me. And I said to them, I said, listen, this was in 2004, and remember, the drugging of women began in 2006. And I said, listen, you know, if you people, if all of you people were willing to go to a Finnish court and tell the judge to give William back to me, I said, we could go back to Australia and he would be well cared for, because my mother, my mother loved him very much, and William loved her very much. He was a form of protection from his mother. My mother was a form of protection from William's mother, Kaisu.
Mm.
And she doted on him, you know, she was very kind to him. And anyway, so we could have lived with her, and she would have taken wonderful care of him, and there wouldn't have been any drugs, and, you know, and I said, listen, you know, we can give William a nice life in Australia. All you people have to do is go to the Finnish court and tell the Finnish judge to give William to me. And I said, if you do that, it will probably happen. If you do not do that, it will probably not happen. And, you know, not one of them said one word.
Wow, so nothing.
No, and I repeated my request, and still nothing, stone cold silence.
Yeah.
And so anyway, 2009, I'm in Finland, Mikael's birthday party, in July 2009 at the children's home. and Kaisu was there. It was the last time I ever saw her. In 2011, I arrived in Finland. I got a Finnish SIM card, and I whacked it in my phone. And one of the good things about Finland, there are some good things. In Finland, you don't have to prove your identity to get a SIM card. You know, it's a little bit of freedom that Finland's got that we don't have. You know. Anyway, so there's always something better about another country, you know?
Yeah, it's not all bad. It's distributed across the board, and there's some good things with some countries and some bad things. So I got you, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I rung Kaisu, and Kaisu said, "Kaisu puheli missa." Kaisu is on the phone. And I said, "Hello, Kaisu." And she hung up on me. That was it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm at this birthday party, and there was these. I gave Mikhail this pig, and it was a dog toy. But when you squeaked, it made squashed it, grunted, and he had a fun time with it. And you know, anyway, that was the best toy he got that day. By the way, he was running around whacking everyone with it and would grunt. And every time you hit it in a different way, it would make a different noise. It was a great toy. But anyway, so there were these two people there called, and these people are really interesting. They're called Auntie and Paula. In English, we say Paula. And anyway, so they are two lawyers, and they're maybe 40 years old. And they, I don't know if they're married or not, but they don't have any children of their own. And I found out in 2009 that they were acting as part-time foster parents for Mikhail. And they'd been taking him to their home for weekend visits. Which is very interesting considering the fact that I've not been allowed to spend one moment alone with Mikhail in the entire 11 years of his life.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. So, anyway, Auntie and Paula, after I left Finland in 2009 or 2010, they got permanent custody of Mikhail without a court order. And you know, so sometimes they send these social workers and psychiatrists, they send me letters and they're saying, "We intend to do this and here's your opportunity to respond." But I respond with lawyers sometimes, but it makes absolutely no difference at all. And, you know, on the subject of lawyers, if I could, I don't know if I already said this, but if I had more money, I do believe I could find a good human rights lawyer. No luck, you know, because I don't have enough money. But anyway,
let me ask you this at this stage. Yeah. I hope it's not cutting it in too quick here. But
yeah,
does your wife, you know, or your former wife have money for an attorney, or is it all the government on this end on the Finnish end that are paying for all of this, and they are now the sole caretakers of your children? Do you know what your role, if you will, of your wife is at this stage, and if she has hired people to help her with the case?
I believe she technically still holds the children's passports, and she's technically their keeper because there's been no legal decision in a court that Mikhail has to go to these foster parents.
Yeah.
And I believe that the Finnish state is willing to throw the entire might of the Finnish state at me to prevent any gain whatsoever in a Finnish court of law.
And why is that, do you think?
Because I've been trying to put these, for one reason, I've been trying to put these psychiatrists in jail. And so, because I believe they're kidnapping my son and they're poisoning him to death with drugs. And when I was there in 2011, William had black rings around his eyes, and he was mentally dull, and he was lacking in energy.
Just and the I way believe, they want him, huh?
Yeah, and I believe that if they do not soon stop this drugging, he's going to suffer organ damage, you know. And interestingly, they accuse him. They sent him to a place in the place called Turku in 2011, and for special treatment, it was about 5 kilometers outside of Turku, which is the second biggest city in Finland. And I went there. It was a place called Lausti. And it, again, it looked quite nice from the outside. They had an old tractor in the yard and some low-set buildings and some nice gardens and things. They accused William of attempted suicide. I don't know about attempted suicide, but self-harm and extreme restlessness and extreme aggression. And interestingly, I've been looking on the websites of the manufacturers of these drugs, and they mention restlessness and aggression and suicidal behavior.
Yeah. Yeah, no surprise.
Yeah. So I went to this Lausti place, and I was only allowed to phone. That was in June 2011. I was only allowed to phone William once in June 2011, and I was allowed to visit him once in 2011 for 1 hour.
Wow.
Yeah. And anyway, after that, William came back to Turleton Children's Home. And by this stage, Mikhail had been put in a... and they wouldn't, in this Lausti place, they wouldn't let me give William a packet of organic raisins, and they wouldn't let me give him any money.
Yeah.
And yeah, and so I Turleton sometime in 2009 or 2010, William was back there in 2011. William was back there in July, and then I was allowed to see my children twice a week for 1.5 hours at a time, but only at the headquarters of Plastikar Lapset this time. And so every time I saw Mikhail, this auntie and Paula would bring him, and then the children's home would bring William, because by this stage, as I said, Mikhail was living with auntie and Paula. And so now on the subject of auntie and Paula, it's very interesting because it's a clever smokescreen. Because if two lawyers are witnessing how my children are being treated and they have no desire to complain, then this backs up the Finnish government's argument that they're being well cared for. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But on the other hand, if Auntie and Paula do anything to help me improve my parental rights, they risk losing Mikhail to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if they do anything to help me improve my parental rights, they risk having the social workers and the psychiatrists take Mikhail away from them and give him to somebody else.
Yeah, that's right.
So basically, these people are either terrorized or brainwashed by these psychiatrists. I don't know which.
It could also be then that if they do anything to upset the order, if you will, here, then they might not they might not work with them in the future. Meaning, if they are interested in you know having a foster child, pretty much, then they might be out of that game, so they're playing ball no matter what, right? That they're just trying to be good, behave in a good way according to what they want, what the state wants, yeah.
Yes, but, you know, perhaps it's the best thing that could have possibly happened to Mikhail under the circumstances, because they do seem to take good care of him. And they do have plenty of money, and they have a nice apartment and a nice car and a snowmobile and a boat and all these things. And he gets to, you know, take trips around Europe and he's playing sport, and he seems to be very happy. So I have hope for Mikhail, you know. And so this Jukka Mertainen from Turleton, he told me that they only drug 4 out of 7 of the children. So perhaps it was my complaints, my forewarning to the police. I don't know. Maybe that did some good. They figured, well, we can't drug both these children. It'll be too obvious. They certainly can only drug 4 out of 7 in the children in the foster home, because it would be too obvious. But anyway, I have hope for Mikhail. And so,
well, let me ask you, why do you think that they want to drug them? Is this experimentation? Are they experimenting with the drugs itself? What do you think is going on there?
I have no doubt that that's going on. But also, these drugs do seem to be, if you look at the list of side effects, they do seem to be designed to cause the maximum damage. And I believe if this drugging does not soon stop, that William will have physical damage so severe that he will need drugs to alleviate the symptoms of that physical damage.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So because they'd been giving him five drugs at the same time, you know.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I believe what's going on is basically the drug companies, the government medical people and certain children's charities like Plaster Carl Apsett, they're making a lot of money out of this and they're perfectly happy the way things are. And I think that's basically what it is. But I don't know if I quite said this, but I believe that if my children were given to a family member, that would be a stepping stone to getting my children back. And I think they also find it harder to control family members than foster parents, and that's another reason why they won't give the children to them.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's going on there.
What has happened here then with William, considering that he's an Australian citizen? Is it enough that your wife is Finnish and so therefore her children is automatically Finnish citizens as well? So are they dual citizens, or do you know what actually goes on here legally under the surface?
They do have dual citizenship, but when I returned to Australia in 2003, the Attorney General's Department, a woman called Helen Tooth, they said she was the most experienced person with the Hague Convention in Australia, and she said that because I had visited Finland, I had acquiesced and I had forfeited my right to a Hague application.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Just because you visited Finland? Now you're...
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I went there and I said, please come home. And she said, no. And I said, please let me take William home. And she said, no. And anyway, so what else happened? In 2012, 2013, the book finally went on the internet, and these social workers were not impressed with this, and they told me, I think I started saying this, but I don't know if I finished it before, once they saw that there was pictures of my children in this book, my friends who deliver my children's mail are no longer allowed to take photographs of them. Yeah, and I've decided that if they're going to poison my son to death, then I'm gonna put it in pictures, because maybe one day they will pay for this, you know, and maybe that will help. Again, it's all about, you know, I don't want to punish anyone. I just want it to stop, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if I could wave a magic wand, I would simply say, as far as these social workers and psychiatrists are concerned, I would, if a Finnish judge was to say to me, well, what would you like to do with these people? I would say, well, look, I would suggest that all of their assets be surrendered, to me. And then I would use that money I would find the most effective human rights organization in the world. And I would give most of the money to them, and I would say, you know, go get them.
Yeah.
You know, go get that psychiatry thing, you know. And then I would say, you know, and I would also say that these people are no longer allowed to work in the health or welfare system for the rest of their life, because I do not believe in chopping off their heads or putting them in jail, because putting people in jail tends to make people worse. But then I would say, well, you know, if they reoffended, I would say, ideally, in an ideal world, you know, with my magic wand, I would say, I would rent an island off the Russians on the in the Arctic Ocean, and I would put these people there, and I would say, I would make sure they were taken well care of, but I would say, you're never getting off this island for the rest of your life.
That's how you feel at this stage.
Yeah.
Well, I don't blame you. Do you know if your wife, again, we'll go back to that, because that seems to be a big issue here in terms of what has happened and why it has happened the way it did. Has your wife in any way been declared, I don't know if this is the right word for it here, but basically unfit by the Finnish government to take care of your and her children? I mean, surely if this is the case, then they should have... she should have to justify this to the state in some way, that they should have questioned why now they need to take care of the children as opposed to her, correct?
Well, basically, it seems at least the main reason for Mikhail being dumped on the state was Kaisu's claim that she was unable to cope with the caring of him. It was too hard for her. And
I'm questioning as well, you know, on top of it, you've been mentioning about the what this costs as well for the state and for the taxpayers and everything else, you know, and that I'm back in that kind of mindset again, that, you know, the tremendous costs here, and she would have to justify this to the government in some way, I would think, right?
Well, I really don't know how to explain that, but you see, when I went to the social worker office in a place called Miramaki, and the Finns, they roll the R, they go, rrr, but I can't do that, so I just say Miramaki, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was a four-story building, and now in the city of Vanta, which is similar to the Pine River Shire where I live, at least similar in population, they have a four-story building. And in Pine River Shire, we have a single-story building, you know. And when I went back there in 2007, they had a seven-story building.
It's growing. Yeah.
So and anyway, so the claim that particularly with William that he has to live in this government home for his entire childhood from the age of 3 to the age of 14 now is that he has extreme behavior problems, and so the that and. But the curious part is that by their own admission, because over the years I've collected a large pile of documents from these people, perhaps, you know, only a fraction of you know, what I wanted. Like, for example, the manager of this children's home, Turlatin Seppo Kunanen, he told me there were 500 recorded incidents of violence involving William.
Okay.
Right? Mm. Now, I said to him, I want a copy of all that information, and I have repeated that request over and over, but nothing. And when I met these social workers in 2011, if not before, I said, I want a copy of every document that you have on my children, and you know I have a legal right to have those documents. I want them. And I've been saying that for years, and I just get scraps of information occasionally. But the interesting part is that Kaisu is unable to cope. William has extreme behavior problems. He has to live in this government home. Now, by their own admission, these documents that I possess, his behavior problems continually get worse. And I told them, the more you drug him, the worse he will get. And
sure.
I told the Finnish police this as well. You know, but as I said, nobody cares.
They don't know anything. They're completely locked into the scientific dictatorship and whatever the medical industry is telling them. That's the way it goes. I mean, in their eyes, I believe as well, on top of this, Warren, they don't think that they're doing anything wrong. They're following protocol and procedure and doing everything that they're allowed to do, right? And doing everything they can. But in the process, as you see it, as a parent, you don't want them to have this treatment, and it's wrong, you know?
Yeah. Well, you see, Things just keep getting worse for William. In 2000, I think it was mid 2012, they've shifted him to a place called Ilmaria, which is many hundreds of miles north of Helsinki, and it's run by an organisation called MediVerco, and they are a medical organisation that gets government contracts, and I don't know too much about them, but they seem to have a wide range of medical services, like dental care and health care and, you know, holding children prisoner hundreds of miles north of Helsinki and drugging them. So this place, the more they drug him, the more money they make. You know?
Yeah.
And so I believe that, that there's little hope left for William. I believe he'll soon be permanently damaged or dead. And so...
I'm amazed that the Australian government can't do more, or won't do more here, at least than when it comes to William, who's an Australian citizen. What do they say? Have you been trying more, except this Hague application, you know, that you talked about earlier? Is there nothing else they can do to initiate conversation with the Finnish authorities and the state?
I went to the Australian embassy in Stockholm in 2009, and, or was it 2011? So much to remember, but Anyway, I met two young people there, and one of them was from Finland, and the other one was from Sweden, and they were working for the Australian Embassy, and they made one phone call to I think that was 2007. Anyway, sorry, but look, they made one phone call to this children's home, and that was it.
And there's no paperwork that you could request, or it'd start a process to try to petition to get William back into your custody?
Well, I met an Australian barrister in 2008.
Yeah.
You familiar with a barrister?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. And anyway, he promised much, but sadly nothing came of it. And I went to the Australian consulate in Helsinki and in 2003, and when I approached them again, I think it was 2009, they wouldn't even let me in the building.
Well, yeah. You have to set up time with them ahead of time, though, right? You have to make appointments or something. Or is there nothing locally where you're at now that where you can work with it? You know, from your level where you're at now, or you're inside your country. That's what I mean.
Well, possibly I must have tried at least a dozen times to different people in the Australian government, but nothing ever came of it. But
unbelievable, you know, that they won't help you with this.
Yeah, but. Yeah. You know, I've put 100 times more attention on the Finnish government than the Australian government because it seems to me that the Finnish government doesn't care and the Australian government cares even less.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I know there are good people in the Finnish government, and I know that if they just understood everything that I just told you as being true, I think. And if many people in Finland knew that what I've just told you is true, I would be hoping that there'd be one brave soul in the Finnish government that would step forward and help. You know,
I know.
There was a social worker one time. I can't remember her name. I probably got it lost in my filing cabinet somewhere or my email somewhere. But she mentioned to a psychiatrist. This was in 2007. That she thought the drugging of William should stop.
Mm-hmm.
And she just mentioned it to her verbally, and that was as far as she was willing to go. And I once met a woman, a secretary in the Vantaa police station, and she seemed to believe my story, and the interpreter seemed to believe my story. But it's unlikely if I had pressured them further if they would have stepped forward to help in any way. But I should have.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Warren, as well, because I think that there might be, at this stage, as you've kind of clarified and alluded to a little bit, that there is something else going on at this stage. But it possibly could be because you have basically voiced concern, maybe in a way also in a manner that they are not used to, shall we say, that you have, and not that you've done anything wrong. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that from their point of view, where the state is God and you submit, there's no questioning whatsoever going on in terms of their behavior and everything else, right? So when you've showed an attitude of basically beginning to question them, you know, when you begin to demand documentation for certain things, what's going on, give me share information, the more you've been doing this, the more reluctant they become, you know, in the relationship towards you, and said, "Oh, we need to hold this guy back." Basically, that's what I think has happened partially as well. Would you agree with that?
There's no doubt that I've made the mistake of trying to explain to these social workers and psychiatrists what they're doing wrong, and how we could be friends if they could help me stop the drugging of William and help me getting back to Australia.
Yeah.
But I've lost patience with them at times and got angry with them and said, although I haven't said anything they didn't deserve, I didn't think was true. I didn't become threatening or extremely abusive.
Sure.
I think I. Yeah. But I, you know. Anyway,
if they expect any other reaction, considering the scenario, they're brain dead. They're completely fucking emotionally dead at this stage. Sorry, but, you know, seriously, I mean, they have to put themselves in the same situation. And if their children were taken away from them in the same way, held by someone in a foreign country, and they were subjected to, you know, medication and things like that that haven't been approved by them, or they even know what's going on, how do you think they would react?
Yeah, well, if I learned many years ago that if I had a lot of money, I would have hired a team of human rights lawyers, and I would have kept my mouth shut.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they would have, as you said, been very diplomatic and bowing down and, you know, all the right protocols.
Yeah, you have to jump through the hoops in just this way, and then you can.
But you see, if I was to talk to these social workers again, I think it would be a clever thing for me to say, how would you like it if your mother took you to the other side of the world and then refused to let you return to your home and see your father for over a decade, and then your mother was to dump you on the state, and then the state was to drug you without any scientific proof of illness, and I've been demanding this since 2003, and no proof has come because none exists. And so there are all these vague definitions. They have this thing called the DSM, the Psychiatric Bible, and there is not one form of human behavior that could not be categorized as a mental illness if you look at that book.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is what I'm talking about when it comes to the scientific dictatorship, that any kind of behavior now could be considered to be an illness, a psychological issue and problem, and needs to be dealt with a chemical application, you know?